Did you open a can, by the way?
Did I open a can?
Yeah, I heard a popping at about 48 minutes, just like 2 minutes ago.
Oh, no, I didn't. I didn't open a can, but I knocked over a container with toothpicks in it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
You're good.
I need to clear my workspace a little better.
Damn right you do. Damn it, we're running a professional outfit here.
Are we?
No.
Okay. Well, that was definitive.
That went from irony to painful abject realism pretty quickly, didn't it?
You think of Earth as a singular planet. In fact, it is anything but. For this is a story not of a universe,
but a multiverse.
Where universes and planets, such as Earth, were replicated and mirrored across a vibrating, infinite plane. Some barely different from the next.
Others drastically so.
This is DC On Screen. Every week, Dave and Jason talk about the multiverse of DC properties on film and television. But be warned, if it's been officially released, you can expect they'll spoil it.
Welcome into DC On Screen episode 479. I am your host, David C. Robertson. This, my co-host, Jason Goss.
Hiya.
So, yeah, man. I kind of feel like we don't have, like, a lot of an update for anyone in terms of, like, our personal lives. Even though we didn't talk about our personal lives yesterday, we just recorded the Black Lightning review.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I don't know. It seems like we haven't been away for very long. But, hey, man, how you doing?
No.
You doing good?
Good.
Anything to report? Like, anything to announce proclaim or anything?
No, boring stuff. Boring stuff over the weekend, the whole thing.
You still working on your bathroom?
I am, yeah. And I went to go do everything underneath and all the drainage and all that stuff and, like, went to cut one wall and turns out that under that piece of drywall, because that's an addition to an original part of the house from 1947, they just left that wall. They didn't, like, tear down the exterior wall. There's just...
Oh.
They just put a piece of drywall over it and started the other room.
Whoa, that's special.
Yeah. So I made the sound you just made for about 15 minutes because it was that or you know, anger. There's really only two choices. And literally got out graph paper and went back to the drawing board here.
I mean, you could have gone all Weeper on it, you know.
I'm not there yet with the renovations. I'm not quite there. That's a thing in the future, probably.
Yeah. Just gone all Tim Conway on that.
Yeah. That's in my future. But no, I managed to just laugh that one off. And next time it happens, I'll probably just cry and hurt something. Hopefully not myself.
Fair enough.
Not.
Well,
I'm leaving that one open-ended, though. I'm not promising anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is a news episode. And before we jump into news, I do want to mention or remind you guys that you can leave us a voicemail at 205-259-6331, and we'll play it. We'll play it on the show if you're, you know, of sane heart and mind.
Yeah, and respond to it if it makes any fucking sense at all.
Unless you're the Widder Woman, we'll probably just play it and be like, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, but probably chuckle and be confused and move on.
Yeah. So, I'm going to start the news off with kind of a bummer, honestly, or like, not even kind of a bummer, just a real, like, sad, crappy news. Yeah, it's a follow-up from last week. Makuta, the 11-year-old Batman fan who had cancer, he passed away. And he didn't actually get to see, like, his last wish, you know, that Ben Affleck was trying to help him with to get his family or his mother to Atlanta. That didn't happen. He did get to talk to her on FaceTime, but he passed away before she could get there.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt weird not following that up.
Yeah.
But it is super sad.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say to that one. That just sucks.
Yeah.
Is it possible you have anything less sad up your sleeve? Because
lots of stuff.
That's the only place I know where to go with it.
Yep. I am going to move on and try to be happier. I'm sorry.
Surely we can manage happier than that. What do you got?
Yeah. All right. Well, Deadline is reporting that WB has completed a deal with Kathy Yan to direct Birds of Prey. I don't know what Kathy Yan has directed. Like, I mean, I do, but a movie called Dead Pigs and a number of shorts. And that's it. Like, two or three shorts, that's it. And Dead Pigs. And I haven't seen it, so I don't know what to think about it.
Yeah, I'd never heard the name before in my life.
Nope. But yeah, so the Birds of the Birds of Prey movie is reportedly going to introduce Batgirl into the DCEU before her solo film, and provide us with the next appearance of Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn. So there's more to this, though. Variety says that Suicide Squad 2, which is being directed by Gavin O'Connor, is now being pushed back and is unlikely to start shooting in 2018. It's actually unclear if it's even still moving forward. Justin Kroll on Twitter said, as for Suicide Squad 2, clearly moving out of 2018 shoot. The move to go with BOP, Birds of Prey, not only had a lot to do with Hodson's script, Christina Hodson, we talked about that last week, but also the idea of doing with Batgirl what Marvel did with Black Panther and Civil War by introducing them into the universe before giving them their own film. So yeah, that's cool. I would like to see Batgirl before. I would see her, you know, in a standalone before. I don't care, but
yeah, either way.
If we do like a Gotham City Sirens / Birds of Prey type of situation, that could be really cool.
Sure.
And there may be a little bit more to this because I mean, who knows, right? But there is a big piece of news that also came out this week. Steven Spielberg is going to either produce or direct. They seemed like they were saying direct. A DCEU movie. Well, they didn't say that either. It was just a DC Comics film based on Black Hawk. David Cope is writing this, and he's a longtime collaborator with Steven Spielberg. And I've seen a lot of people saying like, "Oh, this is the asshole who wrote Kingdom of the Crystal Skull." Let's be fair, though. He also wrote Jurassic Park. and the Lost World, was good.
The way I hear it, that fridge scene was insisted upon by powers that were definitely not him.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, honestly, and I'm going to get crap for this. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I liked Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I did not feel like that movie was any more dumb than the other Indiana Jones movies. Like, I feel about that movie much like I feel about Die Hard 4 and 5. Like,
Dave,
what do you think happened here that made it into a cartoon? Because it was a cartoon before.
That was amazing. In the course of one sentence. That's before you elaborated. In the course of just how you started that, you managed to piss off anyone who so indignantly said, "That was a pile of shit. Are you kidding me?" And I'm in that group. I watched it one time. I laughed the entire time thinking, I'm not supposed to be laughing right now. But then, to anyone who might have been thinking, "Yeah, Dave's got my back," you went, "Because you're fools too." I think you managed to put yourself on an island in the course of like 15 words. It was pretty impressive.
I'm good, man. It was pretty impressive. I stand by it. Like, exactly like the Die Hard movies, man. Like, I enjoyed all of those movies, like all of the Indiana Jones movies, all of the Die Hard movies, some of them more than others. But, you know, the people who step out and say, "Well, this, you know, Crystal Skull turned it into a cartoon." No, it didn't. It continued a path. I'm sorry that the new movie didn't live up to your rose colored nostalgia.
That is some of that, sure. I never got over the fridge scene. For the whole rest of the movie, I couldn't get over the fridge scene.
Oh, I mean, it was dumb.
It wasn't even I didn't care about aliens.
They weren't aliens. They were extra-dimensional aliens.
I know, but it was like, they brought in aliens into the freaking Indiana, just supposed to be at archaeology. I mean, the Ark of the Covenant was a big thing. Like, they were clearly hitting big every time they went. Like, I don't know. I'm
confused because, like, okay, in the first one we did, like, literally the Ark of the Covenant melting people's faces, the power of God melting people's faces. In the second one we had, like, voodoo shit with people pulling hearts out of chests. You know, the third one, like, they literally had the Holy Grail and, like, I don't know, St. Peter or Moses or whatever the hell.
Whoever that was.
Whatever the hell that was.
I mean, yeah, that's the part that I didn't disagree with. In the course of those movies, they brought out God, they brought out magic, and they brought out aliens. And I don't care what system of theology you're into, I feel like everything was pretty much included.
Yeah, like whatever the thing is whatever the mystical and or supernatural sci-fi thing is in these movies that they suspect is at the heart of this. It always turns out to be real. Like,
yeah.
When I saw that crystal skull, I went, oh, yeah, we're doing aliens this time.
That's gonna, aliens are going to end up being real. Sure. Anyway. Yeah, I just that was the part where I was like, oh, it's such a stretch. I'm like, did you see the other ones? Anyway.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, David Cope, whatever you think of those movies, David Cope, he wrote War of the Worlds, Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. By the way, he's writing the new Indy 5 too, so just get ready for that if you had a problem. The first Mission Impossible movie, Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie, mm-hmm. Stir of Echoes, The Mummy, the 2017 version, so bleh. Angels and Demons.
I haven't seen that. I don't know whose fault that was. But it did not go over well.
Zathura, Space Adventure, Secret Window, Snake Eyes, The Shadow, Carlito's Way, Death Becomes Her, Toy Soldiers. There's plenty of stuff to choose from. And, you know, you can pick any number of things from his catalog and make an argument that it's either bad or good. I say we just wait it out and see what happens, you know?
I'm fine with that. But unpacking the universe as it is in DC, like, I don't know if that's going to be attached or not. You could.
Like,
there's no reason you can't. You can throw a few lines that way, and it can be a standalone that also, you know, pays a little bit of tribute here and there.
You remember Sed Tegmawi, the guy that played Samir in Wonder Woman, last year tweeted a picture of Black Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
And said, coming soon. And everyone thought that meant whispers. That he was going to be in it.
Yeah, no.
And by the way, he's still posting stuff on Twitter about Black Hawk now and the Black Hawk Squadron.
Oh, see, that'd be cool. I mean, at least have somebody that was tied in. That'd be fine.
It's a World War II story, you know. And the Black Hawk Squadron were created in 1941. And they were a big international squadron of pilots led by this American guy called Black Hawk. And then later on, they were all called Black Hawk. And there was even a lady Black Hawk who was Zinda Blake. And she wound up getting time displaced and wound up as a main team member of the Birds of Prey for a long time. And I really liked her character. So that's how, you know, that's another thing. That's kind of interesting that they're bringing in Birds of Prey. And now they're talking about Black Hawk. I'm like, could we see a lady Black Hawk?
Nice.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
None of that's to be ruled out. I mean, it would be cool. But as you pointed out, it doesn't really matter if it's connected to the universe or not. If Steven Spielberg approaches Warner Brothers, they say, like, yes, and what do you need?
Yes, yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing World War II. I hear you have a good bead on that.
Yeah. I hear you've treaded on this material before.
Yeah. So I'm not heavily, heavily steeped in Black Hawk, but... I don't know. I'm excited for it. Like, I liked Lady Black Hawk a lot in the Birds of Prey. And if Samir is back, I'd like to see that as well. Like, that's exciting if that's true. But
the only thing I don't want out of this is I don't want it to be something we do every 6 months where they attach a giant name to an unconnected movie and then we never hear from it again. Like, look, Scorsese.
Right.
What are you talking about? I never said that. Spielberg, I never said that. What are you talking about?
Well, the difference is the Scorsese thing, they haven't, like, officially announced, and they've officially announced this.
I know.
But, I just
don't want that to be a trend.
What's exciting to me is, like, a lot of people are saying, like, you know, like, oh, man, Spielberg was the one that, you know, said that the superheroes were going to go the way of the Western, blah, blah, blah. But, like, this kind of project is exactly the way it's not going to. Like, Steven Spielberg coming in to do a World War II, you know, period piece.
Using these characters? Yeah, no, it's...
Using these DC characters that tie in... Yeah, that's how you do
that's
it, man.
That's the way you dig in deeper and find a whole new level you can explore cinematically. Like, that could be groundbreaking if it happens the right way.
Yeah. So, I'm excited. Now, over to Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
James Wan announced earlier with a photo on his Twitter of Randall Park... He says, so happy and fortunate to be finally working with this man, Randall Park, on Pickups. # Dr. Shin. And it's like him and Park, and they're standing in front of a blue screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the comics, Dr. Stephen Shin was a friend of Tom Curry, Aquaman's pappy, helped train Arthur with the use of his powers, but then went nuts and tried to kill Arthur when Arthur wouldn't reveal the location of Atlantis. Then later on, when the Trench were killing Atlanteans. Yeah, but then later on, the Trench were killing Atlanteans. Arthur asked him to help out, and he did, but then turned on Aquaman again because Aquaman wouldn't let him keep a Trench corpse for research. So, real stand-up guy. And as for Randall Park, I have a lot of faith in the guy. I've seen him in a lot of stuff over the years. And everyone keeps like bringing up Fresh Off the Boat. He's also going to be in Ant-Man and the Wasp, by the way.
Oh, cool.
But everyone keeps bringing up like, oh, it's the star of Fresh Off the Boat. I didn't see that. In my heart, I'll always know him as Asian Jim Halpert. You remember that from The Office?
All right. Although I have seen Fresh Off the Boat many episodes. Just it's one of the ones the wife watches, and when she's watching one, I actually do sit down and watch that one. It's pretty funny, and he's great.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, in a comedy situation, he's great. I don't know how he's going to do an Aquaman.
Yeah. He sold it as Asian Jim Halpert, just convincing Dwight that Jim was Asian all those years. You are not Jim. This is Jim. He looks at the picture, and it's like that dude with like two Asian kids with Pam.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I love The Office.
It was great. Those were historic level pranks.
Oh, yeah. So Grace Randolph of Beyond the Trailer did a whole video, and she was very condescending and weird, and I was unhappy with it. She tweeted out her video and said, "So, wow, last week Aquaman managed to announce, quote, pickups and adding Park Randall as a brand new character without anyone noticing." And in the video, I watched about 2 minutes before I just clicked off of it out of disgust, where she's just, you know, doing a lot of like air quotes when she says pickups and trying to like, oh, they're adding a character and they're, you know, putting a positive spin on it, et cetera, et cetera. And James Wan responded to her and said, and he was a lot nicer than I would have been. He says, "Hiya, Grace, love your stuff, so I'll speak up. I didn't add a new character now. Dr. Shin was in the script since day one. I had cast Randall a year ago. I'm a big fan of his, but I didn't shoot his stuff until now. Hence, it's literally pickups with him." Mm-hmm. Cheers. I was like, hell yeah, dude. Get it. And
get it, but be polite and classy.
No, he was still like nice about it when people were like, you know, doing what I just did and was like, get it. He was still like, hey guys, calm down. I wasn't attacking her. Just letting you guys know.
Just correcting a thing that I know is wrong. It's fine.
Yeah, he was still classy about it.
that is nice. I the only thing it I is. Saw out of all that, I saw some mention of her, but I thought, I don't know who the hell that is. I did see like a lot of these. They're doing pickups and reshoots and blah blah blah. The movie's doomed. It's like the better part of a year before we see that film. They're fine. They are way ahead of this.
It's 8 months.
I mean, they're fine. This isn't. Yeah. They didn't just finish filming something 4 weeks before the thing is in a red carpet. Like they're fine.
Yeah. And by the way, for her part, she did like respond to that and, you know, say like, oh, we're looking forward. Me and my listeners are watchers are looking forward to the movie and blah, blah, blah. You know, they are all very cordial and everything.
Mm.
But, you know, I don't know what else she would do except be like me and just be like an asshole.
Yeah. it's one of the things that bonds us, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just can't help it sometimes.
Hi, I'm Dave, and I'm a reactionary.
I was thinking more of the asshole part.
Yeah.
We have that piece of DNA, whatever makes it.
All right, over to Shazam. Zachary Levi, man. You know, I feel like a hypocrite because I came out and I said we're not going to be talking about all these like Instagram things anymore. Like when the stars come out on Twitter or Instagram, we're not going to talk. And then Zachary Levi and David Sandberg are just like, yeah, you will. Like, it's not news, but it's funny.
If
if
it entertains me, screw it.
Yeah. Everyone on the internet is still like pissing and moaning, saying Zachary Levi isn't ripped enough.
Because he was Chuck, and he weighed like 130 wet, yeah. Man. I get that.
So he puts up this picture of himself, like, holding a weight, like, looking, you know, pretty buffed, staring off into the distance, like, dramatically. And he writes, it's like the old saying goes, Hard work over time plus chicken and broccoli minus carbs divided by whey protein, in which X represents the amount of supplements and Y represents the sentiment of why the hell am I doing this to myself, multiplied by shameless selfies while staring into nowhere, carry the one, equals results.
See, that's the kind of thing I can get behind.
And Henry Cavill responded, looking fantastic, sir. Bloody nice work. And your nowhere stare is on point. And Zachary responds, honestly, the nowhere stare has been the biggest challenge, but 2 to 3 hours a day of nowhere stare practice has really paid off.
All right, that's hilarious. All right. Yep. Carry on, guys.
I feel like they're just bashing us over the head with the idea that Superman is going to be in Shazam.
I don't know. Cavill's just so engaged in social media concerning this universe, and that's pretty much all Zachary's doing right now. So
yeah,
I feel like they're just kind of in each other's orbit at this moment, but it does deeply make me want to have at least like a 20-minute short film where no one gave him a script and they just sent him out in costume and said, do what you want. We'll put some effects on later. Just go.
Right. Well, on Superman's birthday, the 18th, Zachary Levi posted a picture of Superman getting punched in the face by Shazam and wrote, happy birthday, old man. You don't look a day over 75. Stop running into my fist.
Yeah. So you see my point then.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I want more Superman. I want more Cavill.
Shaved, I do. But yes.
Yeah, shaved. Someone asked Christopher McQuarrie recently if he would direct a Man of Steel sequel, and he just said, they know where to find me. Hey, this is the dude that directed the last Mission Impossible, the one that wouldn't let Cavill shave his mustache.
Right. Yeah.
Though I doubt it was his call. Yeah.
I mean, that's a tough call.
Oh, I have no idea.
And just one of the silliest decisions I've ever seen take place.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I think we're done on movie news. If you're not following us to TV news, we are going to get a little bit spoilery. If you're not caught up, we will be talking about a number of TV shows. We're going to be talking about Gotham, Legends of Tomorrow, Arrow, and we're going to get super spoilery on those. So if you're not following us, thank you for listening. Go check us out at dconscreen.com. We're over on Twitter at dconscreen. We're on Facebook at dconscreen. We're on Instagram, same thing. And we love you, and we hope to hear from you soon. On to DC TV news. Have you heard about this No Man's Land shit on Gotham?
I did. I'm scared and confused.
Yeah, me too. Now, the show hasn't even been picked up for season 5, but according to executive producer Danny Cannon, a Dark Knight No Man's Land will change the fabric of Gotham's DNA. He says the catastrophic event, the cataclysmic event that happens in the last 3 episodes not only will change Gotham, it not only combines so many characters that you don't think will cooperate with each other, but it changes the face of Gotham forever. So that season 5 is almost a reboot and a different show.
Yeah.
And he referred to it as a reboot of stories. He says, our characters have reached a maturity now. Our characters are so well-defined, and that's why I think, as writers, that's right about the point when you want to change people's perception of them. The term reboot means just when you thought you knew people, something else will happen. And just when you thought your season 5 would be like season 4, season 5 is completely different. New characters and old characters that have changed. It's a complete departure, and the city has changed too. New characters on a new landscape. We're building to something much bigger. It's the biggest cliffhanger we've done. I mean, there has to be a season 5. Everything points to that because it's set up that way.
That is some really wishful thinking on behalf of someone who has not been renewed and just got a finale date like last week.
Yeah, I'm somewhat concerned about that. Like, either that is them basically saying, hey, you can start talking about this because you're going to be renewed.
Yeah.
And it just hasn't been officially announced, or he is just saying this stuff in hopes that people like freak out and try to get Fox to renew it. Like, trying to get fans to like show support or something. I don't know.
Right.
This is,
I mean, I'm
terrifying.
Erring right now in the favor of, I think it will be.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I wouldn't put money on it.
I wouldn't put money on it.
The thing that scares me the most is that they're going to do this giant cliffhanger. And, mm-hmm. Like, I think in the original concept, like, that what they wanted to do with the show was do this whole, this is how Batman began. And then, like, I don't know if this is just me imagining it or if they said it, but I feel like they wanted to have, like, the last shot just be, like, Batman looking out over the city fully Batmaned, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep, we've arrived. Now, you know, we're out of here. Thanks for watching. It was a fine mm-hmm. idea. I really like the concept. But he's using reboot in a way that I'm not entirely... It's not quite reboot in the way we normally think about it. I mean, I get that. Like, it's...
Yeah.
He wants to tell different kinds of stories. And I think... For some reason, I think what he means is that he's gotten the characters to a certain point. And No Man's Land, like, I've heard him describe it as, like, he's going to shove some characters together in, like, new configurations that are going to be interesting. And I'm thinking the whole time, like, that sounds fantastic. Let's do this. But, I mean, let's have Bruce team up with Scarecrow for all I care. Let's do it. Why not? But, I don't know where that leads them, and I don't know what kind of different story they're planning on telling. But I've actually enjoyed Gotham enough this season that, I don't know, man, I'd be down. I'm not exactly wishing this one gets canceled. It's it's really
If that's where they're landing, I'm really hoping it doesn't get canceled.
Yeah. I mean, the moment I knew it was named No Man's Land, I thought, oh shit, this better be something, frankly.
Mm-hmm. You want to know something infuriating?
I think I already know it. Go for it.
Danny Cannon was talking to comicbook.com,
mm-hmm.
They asked him if they would be calling Jeremiah the Joker.
Oh, yeah. No.
And he says, I don't think so, no. This is an origins show about the beginnings of everything. Therefore, we just wanted to do the beginnings of why. When we first did the pilot, we were trying to create a world where someone like Batman would be necessary. And that's what we've done these last 40 years. If you want to survive as a villain in Gotham, you've got to think big. We just wanted to really make an origin story of not just one character at a time and how they got made, but why things got so out of hand in Gotham and where criminality is going in Gotham. So far, or how far it can get, how bad it can get before someone dons that black suit and becomes a vigilante that will change the city forever. And he says, I think that just spawned the conversation of the idea of it, of the Joker not being one person, but like I said, it's a personality, it's a way of thinking, it's more powerful than just one person, therefore... That sparked the conversation of if it's the opposite of good, the opposite of Bruce Wayne is somebody who just wants to destroy and wants to do it in a chaotic way. That when then that could be anyone because you were literally just going the opposite of your main character and taking it as far as you can go. I don't think that's just one person. I think that is a way of life. It's an ideology. So I feel like they're doing this. They're doing the same thing here with the idea of the Joker that they're doing with... The notion of the show. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Like, they're trying to say, like, oh yeah, we've got to have a cliffhanger because we've got to have a season 5, and if you don't give it, it's not going to work. And they're trying to say, like, well, we just made the Joker, but he's not really the Joker. We can do whatever we want.
I couldn't decide
it's
if
just
I,
an ideology.
Like, I can't decide if he means that there's never really going to be one Joker, which is fine, and at this point, like, something DC Comics is actively doing, so it's hard to hold that against them if that's the route they're going.
Yeah.
Like, next year Geoff Johns is going to explain that whole three Jokers thing, and you know, we have that to look forward to. So
maybe that's where he's going, and maybe it's not, though. Like, I don't know where Geoff Johns is going with that.
Yeah, I know. But it's hard to tell if what he means is that there can be multiple Jokers. And maybe we live in a land where, like, that scene that we eviscerated where it's, like, the stabby, stabby dudes. Maybe it is that the idea can spread so much that a couple of homeless guys and stabby, stabby in full, like, at the end of the fulcrum is just Jeremiah, this engineer turned maniac, and he's not even going to be the last. Like, you'll have to deal with this idea your entire career, Batman. Good luck. There's nothing really wrong with that outright. The only thing I'm pissed about is that it's really David Mazou's fault. Because I feel like we handed the baton to another person. I was like, that's amazing. That's perfect. It's, you know, you fulfilled what you said. It was going to be a new origin. And you did it. And you managed to keep Cameron Monaghan. And he's amazing. So I think you just kind of like took all the best pieces of this puzzle you'd maybe possibly... formed accidentally, and you just put it together the right way, and I was pretty hopeful about that. But Maybe they're just going to go in a different direction. I have no idea on that.
I don't either.
I think they've intentionally set it up where I have no idea on that.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of feel like nothing is anything on Gotham. Yeah. Like, anytime you see anything, they're like, we'll change it later.
Oh, I know. In a way, they're kind of like meta-jokering us all.
Yep.
It's pretty fantastic if you think about it that way.
You know, my favorite theory about Gotham is that it's not really about the beginning of Batman. It's about the beginning of Owlman. That's still my favorite theory.
Yeah. One day you're going to see a set of red eyes under a cowl and go, yep, that's my boy. I knew it.
I think they're past the mark on that. Like, I don't think they can really pull it back from Batman now, but I don't know.
I mean, we haven't seen explicitly a bat symbol, and he did say his favorite animal was an owl. But that's the thing. If historically, the reason he was a bat is because that was his least favorite animal.
Right.
So that's really the biggest mark against the Owlman theory to me.
Maybe, yeah. All right, we're going to talk about Legends of Tomorrow real quick.
Shit.
This is going to be annoying, too.
Yay.
Mark Guggenheim was talking a little bit about whether Vixen and Rip Hunter would be back. And he tells Entertainment Weekly, yes, Maisie will absolutely be back. We just felt like we owed it to the character to complete this arc, complete the story loop that we got her in. Once we took her off of her path in 1942, it was always incumbent upon us to return her to that path. That was something that hung over us as writers and hung over the character.
It should.
I'm looking forward to a different storyline for Amaya next year. We'll reveal our plans for Macy's character at Comic-Con this year. I don't know how they're going to do that, but then he also went on to talk about Rip Hunter. He says, we love Arthur. We love having Arthur on the show. I think Arthur enjoys being on the show. Because it's a time travel show and because we never saw a body, anything is possible.
Well, we knew that part.
Yeah.
We pointed out that part. They looked at where his body should have been, but it wasn't there. And they even took time to focus. But it was still we know the trope. We didn't see the body.
Mm-hmm. It's just aggravating.
I'm not even all that aggravated about that. Like, Vixen, it is a time travel show. If you took her out for a guest star spot for a couple episodes, it wouldn't necessarily interrupt the timeline. In fact, I'm going to double down and say it would be fantastic because maybe they actually pull out the entire team and then they have a backstory with Vixen that wasn't there before and they have to keep secret just on the deal. Not really secret, but we pull out the JSA for a second and maybe, for God's sake, I can see our man again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe even doing something.
Yeah.
Other than standing around looking like a fake lawyer in a black suit.
I get aggravated with the death means nothing stuff.
It's Legends is one of the only places where I do like that premise for exactly that reason. It is really hard to die in Legends.
Yeah. It's really hard to die everywhere.
I know. But, it's more plausible. Like, if somebody dies on Arrow and they come back, I'm like, oh, damn it, man. How'd you pull that off?
And in Arrow right now, they're like, oh, we found more Lazarus pits.
Yeah, I know. But it has to be something terrestrial. With Legends, they're like, yeah, somebody's going to come back to the show. I'm like, oh, they just jumped another time. No big deal. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, sighing about it or anything. It's just, we're going to go visit her in another time period. It's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Rip's trapped in some kind of Phantom Zone time thingy, probably. And
Yeah,
we'll see him again in a second. He'll probably pop back in, maybe phase in and out, and kind of ghost some people for a second before he appears again. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I figured, there was going to be some sort of he had he was using the time drive, so he's probably some other place in history, or he's in a little pocket dimension or something.
Yeah, my
quantum gobbledygook.
My worst fear of it is that he used the time drive, he exploded, and when he did it, I'm hoping they don't do some voodoo where it's he comes back and it's his body, but since he used the time drive in the same space as Mollus, whoever you want to agree with, he inherited some of that demon quality, and we come back with Evil Rip or something.
Again, yeah. They've already done Evil Rip in season 2.
I know. The only way I'd be okay with that is if they did it and they see him and Constantine's hold on, I got this. Just knocks it out real quick and then we just have Rip Hunter back. We're like, oh, that's okay. That's solid.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so over to Arrow. Guggenheim is promising that the season finale is going to be a game changer. He says the show fundamentally changes in the finale, and I think you'll see there's stuff that we were seeding back in the season premiere that finally comes to fruition here in the season finale. Well, yeah, that's how it's supposed to go, Mark. So you'll see that there was a very specific plan to the entire season. Yeah. We always knew that this is where we were headed to, so hopefully in subtle ways have been teasing this all along without you realizing it. My hope is that people are surprised, but also look back and are like, oh, that was kind of the only way they could have ended the season. Now,
I definitely have something to point out about that.
What's that?
He says, hopefully have teased it. As though they wrote the premiere, realized they could use the premiere to finish the thing, and then crossed their fingers that at some point they had on a subconscious level written something into that season that made sense for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, hopefully we alluded to it. I wasn't really paying attention. But we went back and watched episode one, and we're like, we could use that! And then started writing this episode.
Yeah. I kind of like your take and hate it.
I mean, I really hope that's wrong, but it just kind of, that's what it sounded like. I don't know. I don't want to be right on that one.
Yeah. Now, Stephen Amell tweeted a picture of himself sitting by someone who in a hospital bed, and it was like the person was all painted over in green with, you know, probably some little photo program. And the caption said, "Finales destroy me."
Nice.
So, someone's going to be laid up. But speaking of getting laid up, Warner Brothers has announced that Beth Schwartz is going to be taking over showrunner duties on Arrow in season 7.
Nice.
And, you know, a lot of people have been saying, you know, oh, fresh blood, fresh blood. Dude, this is not fresh blood. She's been with this show since season 1. She was a writer's assistant in season 1. Oh, she was co-executive producer on the current season.
Yeah, that's OG.
So I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be more of the same.
At the top. Because at this point, like... Yeah. Guggenheim has annoyed us, in particular, on several occasions, because I'm not sure if he's lying intentionally or if he just says things and then doesn't follow through, but he'll say shit, and then like 3 weeks later it'll be wrong, or he'll say the opposite thing. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
Because you want to hear the showrunner for Arrow and think, well, that's where they're going. And it's just not true.
Yeah.
So, in some ways, I'm kind of hoping for our sake that's going to be, there's going to be a change of pace there. But as far as the seasons have gone, I mean, man, you pick a season and it's been a struggle to get everyone on the same page for a few seasons.
Yeah. I'm hoping for the best, obviously. Like, she has been named full showrunner, full executive producer and showrunner for season 7 of Arrow. Guggenheim, will be sliding into an executive consultant role on season 7 and on Legends of Tomorrow season 4. He's like, Phil Klemmer is going to be taking over full-time showrunning duties for Legends, which, you know, based on his utter lack of understanding of Constantine's character that we talked about a couple weeks ago, makes me a little worried.
Yeah.
But, you know, all I can hope for is the best for these shows. I mean, I don't want to... I'm going to watch them. I don't want to... I've invested so much time. We got this podcast. There's no way I'm not going to watch them.
No, there's...
But, you know, no one wants to sit down and watch, like, a bad season of television.
Yeah, obviously.
And I feel like that's what I've gotten with Arrow this year. Like, Legends blew it away. Blew Arrow away this year. And that's unprecedented for me. Yeah. I'm like, really?
I've liked Legends mostly, and it's still unprecedented for me. I would still agree. It's...
Yeah,
it's been a little rough to watch for a lot of reasons, and it's one of those things where, like, a couple weeks ago when you kind of heard Guggenheim say we miscalculated something, it was about, like, New Team Arrow versus Old Team Arrow, and, like, you invested all this time into Old Team Arrow, and we did this, and they were arguing, and, like, you basically heard him say, like, look, we didn't think that was going to go over the way it went over.
Yeah, and, you know, coding that down, it was just him saying, look, we didn't know how writing works.
It could be that rough.
We didn't know how narrative works.
It's not that way. Like, surely, I mean, the guy knows how it works. He's made great television that we've really enjoyed in the past. But there have been a couple of things where, like, it looking at the whole picture just from here with zero insider information, it just looks like he got to a point where he had too much on his plate and wasn't making calculated decisions. it just feels like it.
Yeah,
it just was a little too much to deal with all at once in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like, man, you're a showrunner, dude. That is a. It's not quite 24/7, but it's literally like 19/7. You get a few hours and you come back too. And you try. Yeah, he's on that too. He's probably writing that in the 5 hours of sleep he's supposed to be getting every night.
Mm-hmm.
Not a personal indictment. So anyway. I'm excited that it's going to transfer
a little bit. Personal indictment. It's a professional one. No, that's quite an oversight, man. That's all I'm saying. That's quite an oversight to not realize that people weren't going to, like, just go completely against the new Team Arrow.
It's been worth it at times. Like, I've enjoyed, as you said, spoilers, I've enjoyed watching Team Arrow whittle down to one person.
Yeah.
Because it's been a neat turn on the story, but we're not where we were right now a year ago when we were gearing up to the series finale of last year. We're not there.
No.
There's a lot left on the table.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, at this point last year, they'd start playing that freaking Prometheus music, and, like, I'd get, like, a pit in my stomach and feel like I had a doo-doo or something. Like, oh, no.
Oh,
something bad's gonna happen.
Gonna
oh, there he is!
I hope it's not what I like.
There he is!
Yeah.
And now I'm just like, what, are we still doing this?
Yeah.
I don't... Why is Curtis mad now? Oh, okay. He's blaming Oliver for breaking up his marriage. No, you made that decision, buddy. I'm sorry.
We watched you on screen make that decision.
Yeah, we watched you lie to your husband and actively choose being a vigilante. This is on you.
Yeah, it was.
But anyway,
it's been a little weird.
Mm-hmm. But anyway,
we'll review that.
I think we're gonna wrap this episode. Yeah. We're this is that's it for the news. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm sure Jason hopes you enjoyed the show.
Absolutely.
You hoped that the audience enjoyed our show?
Any show.
Okay. Well, that's fair. And, you know, pretty nice of you, honestly.
Just being broad about it, but, you know.
Right.
As I've put it before, we peddle in escapism, and good for you, if you managed.
So, yeah, like I said before, you can leave us a voicemail at 205-259-6331. You can check us out every episode for free at dconscreen.com. And, shamalama, guys. I don't know. You can email us at dconscreen@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And we would love to talk to you in any of those places. So, actually, I'm on Vero, David C. Robertson. We're on TV Time. Both of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are so many places to talk to us, and we hope you do.
Mm-hmm.
Until next time, guys, keep some DC on your screen. Why do I sing it now?
I don't know.
I've done that a couple of times lately.
We're on 479. Screw it. Be free, tiny bird.
Free. Chirp, chirp, chirp. Keep some DC on your screen.
Why not? Do like a Norwegian hair metal band. Sure.
I don't even know what that sounds like.
Roughly that in my imagination. You know, that'd be metal. Just cut it. Cut it right now.
Our opening narration was from Dan Juergens' The History of the DC Universe, Part 3 of 10, as featured in DC 52, Week 4. It was performed by me, David C. Robertson. Intro music by Jason Goss and Michael Shackelford. Michael's band, Future Elevators, could be found on Spotify or future-elevators.com. Our introduction was performed by Effie Opelders of the fantastic podcast Stealing the Remote, which lives on SoundCloud. It can also be found on iTunes and Stitcher. We are proudly in partnership with TV Time, TV show calendar and social media site that lets you keep track of what you're watching, what your friends are watching, and where you all left off. DC On Screen is a maladjusted production. Visit maladjusted.tv for more from me and Jason, including sketch comedy, an improvised web series, vlogs, parodies, and more.